we fund these agencies, we pay these people's salaries, we fund these studies. This should be public information. Why are they hiding it? Again, that's you know, when I say my antenna are, you know, tingling, it's because none of this makes sense. They're hiding things they shouldn't be hiding, and the only reason to hide things is going to show them, I think, probably be very incriminating for them.
Hello, everyone. This is Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine. Thank you for joining us for part two of my conversation with Senator Ron Johnson. In this part, we cover the forthcoming investigation into the COVID response and explore avenues for reclaiming the American Republic. Thanks for watching. To me, one of the most unsettling aspects of their mindset is the belief that there are just too many people living on this planet, and the UN and the WHO and the WEF and major financial institutions such as World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, they all say that it's such a huge issue, and there are thousands of academic papers describing overpopulation as a threat to the environment and the very planet. So how do you feel about this? And of course, not to forget hundreds of international programs explicitly aiming at slowing down the growth of the global population. So how do you feel about this theory and its practical implication?
Well, I think Henry Kissinger was certainly part of the group back in the 70s that were promoting this, you know, population control. You had people like Paul Ehrlich talking about the way we're going to, you know, starve, you know, great famine. We couldn't be able to feed ourselves. And of course, he lost those famous bets. The best way to control population is improve people's prosperity, because as you become more prosperous, you just tend to have less children because they're able to survive, that you don't have such high levels of infant mortality. You don't need children to, you know, work your, you know, subsistent level farm. So the best solution, if you're concerned about overpopulation, is, you know, help people rise, you know, raise up their economies and have more opportunity, more prosperity. But I mean, you've always had the Malthusians. They've always been wrong. We've always been able to adapt. I mean, again, I don't know what level of population the Earth can sustain. I know there's, you know, massive populations primarily in Asia. Here in America, we still have, versus geography, we've got pretty sparse population. We have plenty of land. We feed the world.
Many of the experts that you have invited to testify, they share this belief, and it's a very well-substantiated opinion that COVID policies were actually a crime against humanity because of how gravely they violated Americans' rights and their human rights, their civic rights, and because of the scale of these violations. Do you share this perspective?
Certainly people need to be held accountable. We never should have mandated vaccine. You know, after World War II, they developed codes of just medical conduct after, you know, what happened with the Nazis, which basically say you cannot be forced to take medical treatment. You just can't, that can't happen. You know, unfortunately, in U.S. law, and this really dates back to England and smallpox, where, you know, populations were forced to take, you know, vaccine. I can't really explain. Well, first of all, I think it seems to be an elegant solution. If you can come up with something called a vaccine that prevented disease, I mean, how great would that be, right? The problem is we've never been able to develop a vaccine for colds. I think you can argue the flu vaccine is pretty ineffective. I would say the COVID vaccine, other than maybe very, very early on with vulnerable people, there might have been some impact before the effectiveness waned. And then as the virus mutated, which was predicted, by the way, by people like Gert Van den Bosch, mm-hmm. saying that the last thing you want to do is mass vaccinate in the midst of a pandemic, because you'll just drive variations, which was, you know, real possibility that's exactly what happened here. So to force an experimental injected product on the population that has been proven now to cause harm, there's nobody that can dispute the fact that the vaccine has caused harm. I mean, federal health agencies are admitting to myocarditis. But there's just such a host. I mean, the chart I show, Vaers over 37,000 deaths associated with the COVID vaccine. Again, Vaers dramatically understates the number of adverse events, over 1.6 million total adverse events. So you compare that to ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, flu vaccine. It's just orders of magnitude worse. The people that force that on the global population, I mean, I can understand why, people use those terms. I try not to use terms like, as you mentioned. I'm just trying to hold people accountable. What I can do is I can try and expose the truth. One of my challenges is I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical researcher, although I've gotten a pretty good medical education over the last 3 or 4 years talking to, as I said, eminently qualified doctors and medical researchers. So I've got a pretty strong amount or a pretty high level of layman knowledge of what all has happened here. But again, to use those terms, I'm my role is to provide people the truth, to expose it as best I can. And I do it trying to use these eminently qualified experts who can speak with authority.
Well, you became an expert yourself on these matters because of your communications with these medical professionals. And during the most recent roundtable, you asked Dr. Robert Malone a rather peculiar question. You said, "I think one of the things that always bother me is so much of what we're learning in terms of harms of these vaccines were clearly known before they were rolled out." And you mentioned the FOIA request to the Japanese regulators. And you mentioned that the successful vaccine targeting respiratory viruses was never developed. And then Malone described how, and then something that you just said, that vaccine got biodistributed. It was throughout the body. And that vaccines were highly toxic, some of their ingredients and so on, and triggered acute inflammation. It was known before that. And then you mentioned the very mind-blowing uninterest among the healthcare authorities to actually analyze what's happening. And then talking about the vaccine mandates, it was clearly known in August of 2021 that they were not stopping transmissions, and yet they were mandated to millions of federal employees, millions of healthcare workers, and our military. It was clearly known, but yet the mandates were imposed. So do you think that maybe at this point, the evidence of intended harm is overwhelming?
I think so. And, set aside the specific, medical indications, I mean, the fact that the FDA went to court to prevent the Pfizer documents on their trials from becoming public for, what was it, 55 years or 75 years? Again, that wasn't Pfizer doing that. Pfizer allowed the FDA to do it on their behalf. I mean, the FDA should be all about transparency. And of course, because we had a good judge that did not let them get away with that, we're starting to see these Pfizer docs and documents, and we're starting to see the corruption of them. How they didn't report a death when it occurred during the trial. They waited for months after the vaccines got the emergency use authorization. So there's a high level of corruption revealed just in the Pfizer trial data. I think more and more will be revealed as time goes by.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that's the good part, holding these people accountable. During the previous interview with our magazine, you mentioned that if Republicans regain control over the Senate this November, then you'd become a chairman of the Subcommittee on Investigations, which is a part of the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. How would you formulate the objectives of the investigation?
All you'd have to really do is read my more than 60 oversight letters. I'm laying the foundation for those oversight hearings. You mentioned, some of the more, I think, notable oversight letters have to do with hot lots. That letter was really based on independent researchers that were taking a look at the Vaers system, and they compared 20-some thousand COVID lots to 20-some thousand flu vaccine lots. And I mean, the difference is stark. I don't have the numbers right at the top of my head, but I know one COVID vaccine lot had over 5,000 adverse events reported. The largest number of adverse events associated with one flu vaccine lot was, I think, 137. And there were hundreds of lots of COVID vaccine that had in excess of 100 adverse events. So it means to me, I'm a manufacturer. That signals to me a manufacturing process that is not in control. Yeah, I wrote this letter, didn't get a response for probably more than a year. And the response I got from FDA was, we don't see any variation in lots. It's like, I've outlined it for you. You know, these independent researchers have shown you that there's variation in lots, but they just deny it. It's like, you know, you're looking at something that's red and say, well, that's red. No, it's black. Hmm. No, it's really red. So again, it has been maddening from that standpoint. But you know, the other, I think, more notable bit of oversight is, you know, we became aware of the fact that the agencies had the standard operating procedure of how they're going to analyze their safety surveillance systems, you know, primarily VAERS. They didn't follow it. They first of all denied that they did the analysis, proportional reporting ratios, or empirical Bayesian analysis. You know, we got to run on for a couple of years. You'll find, so, oh, no, we're doing empirical Bayesian analysis. Okay, well, give it to us. And they won't. Again, we fund these agencies. We pay these people's salaries. We fund these studies. This is should be public information. Why are they hiding it? Mm. Again, that's you know, when I say my antenna are, you know, tingling, it's because none of this makes sense. They're hiding things they shouldn't be hiding. And the only reason to hide things is it's going to show them, I think, probably be very incriminating for them, that they knew of these harms. They knew them during the trial. They knew them early on. And they said nothing other than safe and effective. And then they went ahead and mandated this to people. I mean, again, children. We've known since the Princess Cruise that healthy children had virtually a zero chance of any kind of serious harm from COVID. And yet we have these federal health agencies with this experimental injection recommending the vaccine for children 6 months and older. I mean, that's a travesty. There can be no justification for that whatsoever. And they're still doing it. They added to the childhood vaccine schedule.
Are you fed up with where our nation is headed? Here at the John Birch Society, we know how to fix a reckless, corrupt, and out-of-control government. It starts with patriots like you. We believe the only way to liberty and national sovereignty is to not only understand what's in our founding documents, but demand that every elected official adhere to them. The Constitution is America's only solution. Join the John Birch Society today. Visit us at jbs.org.
Senator, you mentioned that you would have much stronger subpoena powers as a chairman of the Subcommittee on Investigations. But besides stronger subpoena powers, what kind of resources and powers would be required to get to the bottom of this debacle?
So that's part of the problem. You know, Congress is not serious in oversight. It just isn't. When I was chairman of the full committee, you know, the subcommittee was underneath me. You know, we get a budget of the committee, and then I allocate that to the subcommittees. I mean, when I became chairman, it was, you know, here's my budget. Permanent Subcommittee Investigations got $1 million. I just gave $1 million. I didn't question the incoming chairman, Rob Portman. You know, what are you going to do? It's like, there you go. You're chairman of the committee. There's your $1 million budget. When I timed out as chairman, when we lost the majority, I'm not even a ranking member of the full committee. I'm becoming a ranking member of Permanent Subcommittee Investigation. Rob Portman cut my budget. The committee in total got a 15% increase in budget because they're going to do all this oversight on COVID, right? So they went to leadership and they got a 15% increase in budget, and they cut the budget of the permanent subcommittee investigation, both the majority and the minority budgets, and it hasn't been restored. So I continue to point out the fact that, you know, we're supposedly the premier oversight investigatory committee of the Senate. Providing oversight investigations over millions of federal employees, I've got 5 staff members. 5. So no, it's not even close to adequate for the task. But I've got very good, experienced investigators. I mean, we're the ones that uncovered with Senator Grassley and his staff the corruption of the Biden crime family, which has stood the test of time. We're laying the foundation for, if I become chairman, I have the subpoena power, it's a stronger subpoena power with the permanent subcommittee investigation than chairman of the full committee, which is kind of, again, it indicates when they set this thing up, they really set it up to be an investigatory and a powerful investigatory subcommittee. But you have to fund it. You have to staff it. And until they do fund it, until they do provide funding to properly staff it, you just know that on both sides, they're not serious about oversight. And again, the full committee got a 15% bump to do oversight of COVID, or response to COVID. I'm not aware that the full, I'm still on the full committee. I'm not aware of them doing any oversight. You know, here, 3 years into Chairman Peter's chairmanship, he's finally announced with Senator Paul they're going to do a bipartisan investigation on the origins, which is great. I mean, I'm not overly interested in that because I think it's pretty obvious this was man-made, probably came out of Wuhan. I think that evidence has been destroyed. We'll probably never find the smoking gun. But I'm all for people continue to investigate that, see if we can uncover things. But I'm personally far more interested in the corruption that a response has revealed within our federal health agencies, within Big Pharma. You know, the vaccine mandates, the harms caused by the vaccines, the fact that these people are, you know, the vaccine injured are being gaslit. They can't get treatment because nobody's admitting that. Again, we're all blaming this now on long COVID.
Mm-hmm. I
think it's probably much more likely that what health issues people are having are probably due to the vaccine as opposed to long COVID.
Consider rising cancer rates, and even the official institutions now admit that, and you know, projecting the explosion of cancers. But let's get back to the bigger picture of everything that's happening. It's obvious that the international organizations, and as well as business and political interests here in Washington, D.C., are the same entities that are causing, or at least contributing to, the other problems that we're facing right now. They're facilitating international migration, they are shaping public education, they are pushing this insane climate change policies and so many other destructive policies on American people. So do you see any connections between these agendas?
Yeah, it's all about power and control.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were disappointed that climate change hasn't been embraced by the public to give them as much power and control they wanted. They found the pandemic allowed them to. Now, I oftentimes refer to Eisenhower's farewell address. Bobby Kennedy highlighted that as it relates to his warning about the military-industrial complex, which we have not taken that warning seriously enough. Okay, I think that's still driving a lot of harmful actions on our part. But there were three other warnings. The second warning was he warned us about the issue involved in public funding of basic science and research, saying that scientists, if it's funded by the public, they're going to be more interested in getting a government grant than pursuing true science. And their science is going to be tainted by what the government wants. And so we're going to end up with a scientific and technological elite that's going to be driving public policy. Well, I think that's what we've witnessed during the pandemic. He warned us not to plunder our children's future. But the last thing he warned us about, he didn't spend much time on this, but he said we cannot allow global society to descend into a state of dreadful fear and hate. Mm. That's how they drive all this. It's fear. If you talk about the military-industrial complex, I mean, you got to be afraid of all these tyrants, right? And again, I'm not saying that we don't have to be, but why don't we try and get along with them more than we do? You know, we never look back retrospectively and say, well, what did these policies result in? What did this foreign entanglement? What was the result of it? What was the result of 58,000 Americans losing their life in Vietnam? What was the result in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Ukraine? You know, we helped foment the revolution of dignity. Again, I'm all for people, you know, slipping the bonds of tyranny, pursuing their individual liberty and freedom. But that revolution of dignity is now pretty well resulted in the destruction of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. We ought to ask these questions, okay? And we simply don't. But we ought to be asking the same questions in terms of, how our pharmaceutical industrial complex, how is that driving our health? You know, big ag. You started talking about, corporations and how they drive this. I don't blame the companies. They're not the root cause. They're trying to produce products. They're trying to not be crushed from taxation, burdens of taxation, regulation. The problem is big government. If you didn't have big government and these agencies that are just ripe for capture, they're sitting regulating industry, and the industry, they're not stupid. They go, well, how can I How can I avoid all this overregulation? Well, I'll capture it. Now I'll use it to my advantage. And of course, big companies are more capable of doing that at the expense of little companies. I'm a little company guy. You know, I'm the guy during, you know, Republican tax reform that stood up for 95% of American businesses, the pass-through entities that weren't going to get any tax relief whatsoever. So I just don't like big. We need big to do certain things. But by and large, you want smaller entities. You want individuals with their health autonomy, with their personal freedom. You know, I don't want a big public health organization that's dictating those individuals. So I'm all about small, independent, about liberty, about freedom. And that's not what big government is. I mean, as government grows, your freedom necessarily recedes, whether it's national government or global governance. Mm-hmm. So just beware of these entities continuing to grow, because as they grow, your freedom is going to continue to recede.
Finally, I'd like you to address perhaps one of the most important aspects of defeating the ideology of big governments and corrupt elites, which is essentially un-American and I would argue anti-human. I'd like to quote you once again, because I think that you really hit the nail on the head with this one. So you said at the COVID hearings that the global elites maintain power by controlling information. They push their narrative while at the same time suppressing and marginalizing dissident voices. So that's a fact. That's undisputable. So what steps do you think can be taken to shift public perception away from this manipulative narrative and towards a greater embrace of the constitutional and republican principles?
Well, there's a reason freedom of speech was in our First Amendment. It's just crucial. And so I really think one of the most significant, impactful conservative victories was, you know, initiated by current Senator Eric Schmidt, who was Attorney General of Missouri, and I think it was Attorney General Landry in Louisiana that initiated the lawsuit that has exposed the truth of government censorship. You know, working with the media, working with the big tech social media giants to censor the truth. So the only weapon we really have is the truth. But when you have the global elite in charge of the media, it's very difficult to get the truth out there. Now, fortunately, we still do have free press. Unfortunately, most of the media, they're just lapdogs for the radical left themselves. They're a bunch of leftists, they're Democrats. So unfortunately, most of Americans get their news feeds from the mainstream media. And so they're not exposed to the truth. They're not as questioning as they need to be. But that's what we need. We just need more true journalists. We need more publications like yours, who are willing to fearlessly convey the truth. And we need more people to read these and be exposed to them and then start thinking and be evangelists for the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's truth is powerful, but it has to be exposed.
It has to be exposed. How do you see the role of public education or education in general and civic engagement in fostering a more informed society that would be resistant to manipulation and propaganda?
Well, again, I don't like big. So I don't like these big schools that we've basically evolved into, you know, controlled by the teachers' union. So there are two areas of our economy, if you really think about it, that the American public has not been happy with: healthcare and education. You know, what do they have in common? In both cases, they've largely driven the benefits of free market competition out of their industry. I mean, you don't have free market competition in healthcare. You've only got 10 cents of the dollar being paid by patients. So you don't have free market competition in healthcare, and education you certainly don't. To a certain extent, higher education, but it's such a monolith. You know, in terms of the orthodoxy of the radical left who've taken over university systems, again, that's pretty much a controlled monopoly as well. So the solution is things like school choice. You know, allow school funding to go with the parents and allow the parents to spend that in whatever education system they want. One thing that COVID has done, again, COVID has opened up all kinds of opportunities. It's exposed a lot. But one of the opportunities is in education. I mean, so many people were so offended by the school shutdowns that they wanted their kids going to school. And so there's just been an explosion in different education alternatives. And from my standpoint, much smaller and a lot more of them is a better direction for education.
Mm-hmm. Senator, and finally, my last question to you is, how can we transition from the reactive stance to the proactive role in shaping America in adherence to the constitutional principles and the founding documents in general?
Well, it starts with education. I always say that the masterstroke of the left was taking over our university systems. They did that in the 60s during the Vietnam War protests, where you know the administrations capitulated and the radical left took over our colleges. And so when you control universities, you control all the colleges, but colleges of education, of journalism, and law. So the radical left has had control of those key colleges for decades, and it's showing. So they don't graduate journalists, they graduate advocates for the left. They're not graduating teachers, they're graduating indoctrinators of the left. They're not graduating lawyers that will become unbiased judges, they're graduating lawyers that want to become judicial activists and legislate from the bench. So that's the state of our economy right now. The good news is that you can take control of the education of your children on a local level. You can run for school board. You can push in a state for 100% voucher system for school choice. You can take control of it. I mean, the federal government should have no involvement in education whatsoever. Zero. I mean, Ronald Reagan said he was going to eliminate the Department of Education, couldn't get it done. He should have. But even with the Department of Education here, you can take control over your school system, over your own kids. I mean, I know plenty of parents that homeschool. I know plenty of parents that have just ganged together and they've hired a teacher to educate their dozen kids. You don't have to do it through the public education system, which has become more of an indoctrination mill to the ideology of the left than it has in terms of education. And it's obvious in terms of results. I mean, how dissatisfied employers are with the quality of students coming out into the workforce, not able to understand basic things they should have been taught in school. So our education system is utterly failing us right now, but that could be turned around pretty quickly. So that's what I would suggest, is let's focus on local government, local school boards, focus on your own children, on your grandchildren, make sure they get educated, make sure they understand the truth, make sure they understand the value of freedom. Now, I always talk about, the essential ingredient to America is freedom. It's what we use, what we have used to dream and aspire and build and create this marvel that's America. But the higher value is truth. You need the truth. And I mentioned the Eisenhower farewell speech. My siblings sent around a Paul Harvey recording just yesterday. And it's very interesting because he's describing, this is 1965, and he's describing what's happening then. And of course, it's just gotten way worse over the decades. But he's basically making the point that democracies, republics, they generally aren't destroyed from without. Mm-hmm. It's not the enemies that, of course, we're spending $900 billion a year to supposedly defend against, right? They're destroyed by rot from within. And I would say that's the biggest concern I have for America right now, that we are rotting from within. You take a look at the dystopia that is in our big cities. You take a look at the Soros-funded prosecutors who won't prosecute crime, and so we're getting an explosion of it. You can't feel safe on the streets, in the subways, in public transportation. That's a rot. And unfortunately, like frogs in a pot of water, not enough Americans are realizing that we're reaching the boiling point. We don't have much time left. I mean, I agree with Elon Musk's quote. He said that unless there is a red wave in November, America is doomed. I'm not the most uplifting character. I'm not an optimist at this point in time, but I'm not giving up. I can't turn my back on this marvel of a country and what our founders, what our ancestors gave to us. We need to do everything we can to fight to preserve it.
Thank you for fighting, Senator. I would like to thank you so much for your time today. Would you please tell our viewers how can they learn more about your work?
I'm on the internet. I don't have those addresses. It's easy to find, ronjohnson.senate.gov. On Twitter, you can find me, Senator Ron Johnson, trying to communicate as much as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, America. How tired are you of mainstream corporate media's biased narratives and manipulated news? Their dishonesty and attempts to influence this generation have been exposed, put on display for anyone who's even half paying attention. But the New American Magazine has been an honest source of news and commentary for over 50 years. This is your opportunity to receive the stalwart of principled journalism at a deep discount. Picture a beautifully published magazine arriving at your doorstep twice a month, packed with insightful stories written with integrity. It's also available digitally on the New American's mobile app. Get up to speed with intelligent coverage from a freedom perspective. Right now, for a limited time, the New American is available to radio listeners at a 25% discount on a new subscription. Visit thenewamerican.com/radio25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/radio25.